A very good evening to you all, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to STS Two Seam Baseball, where we shoot your shit every Monday night about all the hot topics of Major League Baseball and in the Bronx. I'm your host, Paul Cataldo, and with me always is my co-host, Kenny Melendez. Kenny, it's Monday night. It's been a couple of weeks. We're picking up where we left off 2 weeks ago with a very special fantasy baseball guru. How's it going, Kenny?
Not bad. Enjoying the little week off that we had thanks to the All-Star break, although the American League didn't exactly show up in the All-Star game, but ready to roll here for the second half.
Didn't show up. Zero runs wasn't enough for you. That they showed up. They just didn't score any runs. But don't forget, everybody, we want to let you know that if we cover a topic that you'd like to comment on, you can call in at STS with us at area code 347-637-2306, option 1, and let us know your thoughts. We're going to kick things right into high gear and introduce our guest returning from 2 weeks ago. He's the co-host of Fantasy 411 on MLB Network and MLB.com and the director of statistics for MLB Advanced Media. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back Mr. Corey Stats-Swartz. Corey, welcome back from Kansas City. Thank you for coming on the show again. Happy to have you back.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
Very good. We're going to do a quick recap for those of you who weren't with us last week. What we did with Corey is that we gave him what we like to call the all-problem team, which are guys that were pre-ranked in the top 50 who've been stinking it up so far this year, and he gave us his buy, hold, and sell recommendations. And just position by position real quick for everybody from last week. At catcher, Carlos Santana, he told us to hold. At first base, Adrian Gonzalez, he told us to sell. Dustin Pedroia at second to buy, as well as Jose Reyes at shortstop to buy. And to hold third baseman Kevin Youkilis. And as our outfield, the brothers Justin and BJ, hold on Justin, sell on BJ, and rounding out the outfield, Alex Gordon, hold on Alex Gordon. So with that being said, we're going to continue right where we picked off. And Kenny, you want to give Corey the all-problem starting rotation, see what he thinks?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Now, Corey, and as you see, this has not been the year of the top 50 of a starting pitcher in fantasy baseball. There have been a lot of guys who have busted this year. And the first name I'm going to throw at you is a pitcher who just got his first win very recently, and that is one Cliff Lee, who is performing with a 1-6 record right now, a 3.92 ERA, and a whip of 1.22. On average, this guy was taken on a second round. What are your thoughts on this guy as far as buying, holding, or selling him?
Well, you know, I should start this with some sort of general thoughts that when it comes to starting pitchers, I'm a lot less forgiving than I am with position players because pitchers are so volatile, and starting mm-hmm. pitching is the deepest position out there. You know, on any given day, you've got 150 starters in Major League Baseball. You know, a 5-man rotation for 30 teams. So,
yeah.
You know, buy, sell, hold. I mean, we will go through each guy, but you know, my general inclination is if a pitcher's not doing well, find another pitcher. You know, there are lots of pitchers out there. You know, every year guys will come along that nobody's talking about, that nobody's thinking about, and they can make an impression and make an impact on you. You know, a month ago, probably nobody even knew who Marco Estrada was, and he's had, what, like 36 strikeouts in his last four starts or something like that. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, as far as Lee goes, his indicators are pretty good. You know, he's just pitched a bunch of games where he's had leads and blown it in the late innings or the bullpen has blown it for him. So, you know, I would tend to stick with Cliff Lee, but, you know, the fact that he's having some struggles right now, that's why I don't like to invest heavily in starting pitching because they're just too erratic and too unpredictable.
Very true, very true. And speaking of erratic and unpredictable, that brings me to the next pitcher on the list here, and that's one Tim Lincecum in San Francisco, who for some reason has just completely lost it this year, and he's been a miserable 3-10 with an ERA just under 6, and I believe he just brought it down recently with his last start. So this guy hasn't really shown any signs of turning things around. I think this is probably an opportunity. You can sell this guy based on his name, you know, see what you can get for him. What do you think?
I don't know, man. He's just, you know, like you said, he's really only had like 3 or 4 good starts all year, and they've all come against very weak offenses. So, you know, he's really a perplexing guy because the strikeout rate is still excellent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he came out in the beginning of the year, he says he wasn't going to throw any sliders to protect his arm, but he's thrown plenty of sliders, so you can't say it's his stuff. You know, his velocity's down a little bit, but a lot of pitchers get by without the velocity. The thing that's killing Lincecum is a combination of you know, a terribly, terribly high walk rate. That's on him.
Yes.
But then when guys get on base, he's had very, very poor results on batting average on balls in play and the strand rate, which kind of compounds. So, you know, If you take out the bad luck, he'd probably still be pitching to a 3.75 or a 4 ERA, and we'd say, what's wrong with Tim Lincecum? But, you know, but that's because of the walks, you know. Averaging 10 strikeouts per nine is just a career worst walk rate. So the last start was encouraging. Maybe he can get on a little bit of a roll because we have seen in the past short stretches from him, four or five starts where he would really stink it up, and then he'd go back to being Tim Lincecum. So the 10 strikeouts per nine shows me the stuff is still there. I would hold on here, maybe keep him on my bench for a little while if I could, but I wouldn't be dumping Tim Lincecum.
All right, interesting. Yeah, I mean, he hasn't had an ERA yet under five in any month this season. So hopefully during the All-Star break he figured something out and he can carry that last start going forward and help the team to the fantasy playoffs or a championship. Next up is a pitcher who normally struggles in the second half, but it's been pretty odd with him struggling in the first half. And this guy was expected to put up another solid season like he's done the last few years, and that's Dan Haran of the Anaheim Angels, where at the moment he's on the disabled list but progressing well. But as of right now, his record is 6-8 with an ERA of 4.86. He was taken on average in the fourth round. Thoughts on Mr. Haran?
Well, I think you put your finger on it. I don't think he's been healthy this year. I think that back problem has really hindered him, and that's really put a damper on the results. So, you know, you look at a lot of his indicators, his strikeouts are okay, his walks are okay, his ground ball rate is down a little bit. You know, again, he's another guy who, you know, if you were to sort of factor out the luck, you know, the luck part of it, the batting average on balls and play the hit rate, his ERA would be up, but not so that you'd be looking at what you would call a disaster season. So, again, I think it's a compound of not being fully healthy, you know, the results struggling a little bit, and then layering on a little bit of bad luck. So, you know, buy, sell, hold. I mean, I would probably hold. I certainly wouldn't be buying because, again, the guy's got a back problem. Is he fully healthy? We really don't know about that. But a lot of these pitchers we're talking about, you know, it's July 16th. To go and try and sell on these pitchers right now, you're not going to get full value anyway. So, you know, I'd be hitting the waiver wire right now and trying to pick up Marco Estrada.
Yeah, that's a pretty good choice right there. I mean, it could also be wear and tear for Haran, too. He's had seven straight seasons of 200-plus innings, so
yeah,
eventually
yeah.
That's going to catch up to you. And if he's having back issues, it could be because of something like that. Not everybody, the Mark Burley, who I'm a big fan of, that guy has proven to be very durable with his 200-inning stretch.
Well, 6 weeks ago we would have said, hey, if he's not named Roy Halladay, we don't trust him, and guess who's on the DL now? So,
yeah.
You know, when it comes to starting pitching, it's not if, it's when. And that's why I my strategy is not for everybody. You know, we talked about this last time, guys, that I like to invest heavily in closers and devalue starting pitching. That's not for everybody, and I get that. But I can't stand the thought of investing or a second, third-round pick in an ace pitcher and then, you know, and then having the guy go out and spend, you know, blow up like Lincecum or go on the DL like Halladay or, you know, have a decent year, but certainly not what you paid for, a guy like Clayton Kershaw or CeCe Sabathia. So I'm going to take those top-shelf closers. Yeah, there's risk there, but when you know, as long as you avoid the injuries with those guys, you generally get your money's worth.
Mm-hmm, very true, yeah. And, I mean, for me personally, I don't like taking any sort of pitchers in the second round either because I'd rather get a 5-5-2 player if I can because I'm just trying to figure out what's the best balance for a team. So, but everyone has a different strategy. Guys like taking aces early on and hope for the best when it comes to building a stud starting rotation. But, hey, everyone is different with their strategy, and sometimes it works. And if anybody's had any of these guys this season, unfortunately, plans are blowing up in their face, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Next up, we have one of the two Boston aces here coming off a pretty solid season last season, and this is John Lester, who continues to struggle. He's having issues with walks, and this has led to an ERA of just under 4.5 and a 5-6 record. This is one guy who's taken close to the top 50 among all players on average in the fifth round. Thoughts on John Lester?
Yeah, again, you know, stop me if this sounds like a broken record, but his you know, indicators aren't that bad. You know, the fly ball rate is down. The walk rate is a career best, so the strikeout to walk rate is strong. Very poor hit rate, very poor strand rate. You know, strand rate in particular really says as much about bad luck as it does about the pitcher. You know, strand rate, you could say, well, you know, the average pitcher is going to have 75-78% of his runners left on base. Anything lower than that you would say is bad luck, and anything higher than that you would say is good luck. But it also reflects a level of performance because some pitchers aren't as comfortable pitching out of the stretch, pitching with runners on base, so they may roll along. You know, you think about these guys who will take a no-hitter into the fifth inning and then not get out of the fifth inning. I'm looking at you, Ricky Nolasco. So, you know, Lester you know, when you look at what Lester has done consistently throughout his career, about a 75% strand rate, this year way below that, so you wouldn't assume that he suddenly lost that ability. You could say in his case that's some bad luck. Then the hit rate is up. So, again, you know, he's a guy that I would say buy just because he's got an excellent track record, not being a superstar pitcher but a very good pitcher. So even if he goes back to being a very good pitcher the rest of the way, you can get good value here.
Yeah, very nice. All right, yeah, I mean, with John Lester, I was looking at his numbers very closely, and the only concern I have is just the fact that his peripherals have been increasing year over year, but maybe I'm looking a little too closely at that. But yeah, I mean, go ahead.
You're right that the strikeout rate has actually gone down. You know, he struck out 10 per 9 a few years ago, mm-hmm. And he's down around 7.5 this year, I think. But he's cut down the walks along the way. So that cuts both ways, that you're not putting runners on base with the walk, but you are still trusting the defense a lot, and that's where that hit and strand rate comes into play. So, you know, off the top of my head, the Red Sox obviously have been missing a big part of their outfield defense with Crawford and Ellsbury being on the DL. Mm-hmm. You know, the infield, you know, they put Yukos at third, but they had Adrian Gonzalez at first base, and then, you know, Middlebrooks came up, a very athletic guy at third base. So, you know, you've got to say that this is just, I don't want to say bad luck, like it's such an easy answer, but in Lester's case, it really looks like bad luck.
Yeah, and that is true. I mean, now, well, you'll probably see an improvement in his numbers now since Crawford made his debut this evening and Ellsbury came back over the weekend. So
yeah, he could.
We'll have to see how the Red Sox pitchers respond now with the better defense behind him. And Pedroia is right around the corner to come off the DL as well.
Yeah, supposedly he's been looking very good in swinging the bat, but, you know, it's sort of like in spring training when they say a guy's in the best shape of his life. We hear those stories all the time.
Yeah, interesting. All right, last one on the list here, the guy who was runner-up or top three in the voting last season for NL Cy Young, and that's Ian Kennedy from the Arizona Diamondbacks. What's going on with Ian Kennedy here? 6-8, ERA of 4.55, and this coming off a season where he won over 20 games and had an ERA well under 3. What about Ian Kennedy?
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, looking at his monthly numbers, he's been kind of getting progressively worse. You know, stop me if you've heard this before, guys. Kennedy's strikeout and walk rates are almost identical to last year. The ground ball rate, almost identical. So, you know, what's changed? Is it a guy who's just not effective because he pitched so many innings last year at a young age and, you know, took something out of him? Or it could be that the hit rate is way up and the strand rate is way down. You know, and that's sort of the common thread going through a lot of these guys. Now, again, you know, to reiterate what I said before, a poor strand rate doesn't always mean bad luck. It could just mean a lack of a certain skill, but, you know, you kind of look at a player versus, you know, what he's doing in a current year versus what he's done in past years versus what the league average is. And Kennedy's a lot like Lester. The indicators say this guy should be pitching to an ERA a run lower than he is right now. So, mm-hmm. You know, unless you've got reason to believe he's injured, and I certainly don't want to hint at something like that, I'd be buying on Ian Kennedy.
Yeah, and that's interesting because it's funny you brought that up as far as the too many innings, because that probably could have led to what happened to Daniel Hudson. I mean, he had a career high in innings last season, and look what happened to him. Ended up getting the Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, and, you know, the so-called Verducci effect, and let me preface this by saying I'm not taking a shot at Tom Verducci at all, but the so-called Verducci effect has been debunked over and over and over again to the point where debunking it further is kind of beating on a dead horse. Doesn't mean Tom's not a great writer, because mm-hmm. he is, but, you know, as an analytic, you know, standard, it's really not valid. That's not to say that some guys don't get hurt because of throwing too many innings. It just means that the pattern is not as easy to identify as may have originally been thought. So, you know, Hudson, 24 years old, threw a ton of innings between the regular season and the postseason last year, you know, came out of the gate struggling a little bit, and there you go. So, you know, in his case, first it was the shoulder and then the elbow. Maybe his shoulder wasn't fully healthy and that changed something in his mechanics, and that's what led to the elbow problem. So, you know, we really have a lot to learn when it comes to, you know, injury treatment in baseball is exceptional these days compared to where it was when we were kids. Injury prevention and you know, prediction is nowhere because guys keep getting hurt. There's your proof.
Yeah, and guys are just dropping like flies, it seems, this year. Well, that's all I had as far as the bad side of fantasy baseball. Paul's going to go ahead and take us to the grass is green on the other side with the All Wahoo team. Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, like we always like to say, Kenny, with bad comes good and with good comes bad. So why don't we flip the switch here to the other side of the spectrum and let's answer the burning questions about, hey, I've got guys that have, you know, been overperforming based on what I thought I was going to get out of them, and what am I supposed to do with these guys? And, Corey, again, we're going to go position by position here, and the catcher that we decided to ask you about is Carlos Ruiz. These are numbers from the as of the All-Star break, 350, 13 homers, 46 ribbies, 41 runs. Average draft pick was in the 26th round, and this guy is probably the top-ranked fantasy catcher. You try to get as much value from him as possible, being that he's probably going to get moved down in the lineup now that Utley and Howard are back, or do you hang on to him?
Well, you know, again, sort of as an overarching thing, the further we get into the season, the more a hot start becomes a really good year. And, you know, Chuch is really having a good year. Let's be fair about that. I think he's going to stay in the middle of the lineup as long as he hits. You know, when Utley came back, Ruiz was hitting fourth, and they actually dropped Hunter Pence down to fifth. So, you know, we'll have to see what the long-term plan is there. But given the way he's been swinging the bat, it's really hard to see them dropping him down in the lineup. That said, it's in my mind, it's impossible to think that he's going to continue at this pace. He's always been a great contact hitter, a guy that you figure would hit for decent averages, but and he still is a great contact hitter this year, but his walk rate is way down, you know, so that I wouldn't say it's a loss of plate discipline because he had established a pretty good level, but he's certainly not controlling the strike zone any better than he used to. He's not hitting any more fly balls than he used to, so the power spike looks to be completely out of nowhere. He's not hitting any more ground balls than he used to, so a low walk rate combined with a decreased ground ball rate doesn't sound like a 350 average to me. So I hate to bet against guys that feel so ugly, but I'd be saying, you know, saying sell on Carlos Ruiz because it's just inconceivable to think he can continue at the pace he's been on.
Okay, I think that's fair enough in terms of law of averages and, you know, sustaining a 350 average. I would probably concur with that. At first base is a guy that I'm actually in the middle of trying to grab right now is Mark Trumbo. He's hitting 306, 22 dingers, 57 ribbies, 42 runs scored, average pick in the 15th round. This is a guy that people maybe shied away from during their drafts because they didn't know if he was going to get traded or have playing time with the acquisition of Pujols and the return of Morales. I like what this guy's done so far. What do you think, Corey? Would you hang on to Trumbo at this point?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say hold at this point rather than buy because I think the batting average will drift down a little bit. Certainly not to, you know, I think he hit in the 250s last year. I think he looks more like a 275, 280 type of hitter now. You know, he's still going to strike out, but he is drawing more walks. So you could say he's got a little bit better eye in controlling the strike zone. The power obviously is legit. So, you know, to see him hit 35 to 40 homers this year would not be a surprise at all. You know, so let's say he hits 275 from here on out with 12 homers or 15 homers, you're going to be pretty satisfied with that. So I was one of many people who was kind of shy about him this year because of, you know, his poor strike zone command and, you know, the risks to his playing time, having to play third base. But, you know, getting rid of Bobby Abreu and Vernon Wells getting hurt and Alberto Callaspo not doing anything to block his path in the lineup as far as third base goes, boom, there go the at-bats, and he's been producing. So at this point, he looks legit. Hard to bet against him right now.
Okay, good stuff. The next guy at second base was kind of a sexy pre-draft pick, sort of a sleeper who was average picked in the 11th round of standard 12-team leagues. He's hitting 277 at the break with 11 home runs, 49 ribbies, 53 runs, and 20 steals. And that's Mr. Kipnis. I like him. What would you do if you were owner of Kipnis or if you were trying to acquire him?
Yeah, my man Jason Kipnis had an RBI double tonight too, so it's a good way to get going. You know what I really like about Kipnis? He's been very, very consistent. If you look at his stats month over month so far this season, at least through the first 3 months, very, very consistent. He's been struggling a little bit in July, so you have to wonder, is this just a slump or is this a guy coming back down to earth? But again, you know, a guy who is drawing a lot of walks lately and will score a lot of runs batting third, not a huge power hitter, but he could end up in, you know, the 18 to 20 range, and the steals are a great surprise. So I would say hold on him. I think based on the stats he's put up so far, he'll be very, very expensive to acquire. But by the same token, I'm certainly not, you know, trying to cash in on him right now. I think he's going to continue and put up, you know, let's say 18 homers, 80 RBIs, you know, 30 steals, something like that, and a good batting average. So that's stuff worth hanging on to.
Okay. You know, at the next position at shortstop, I think a lot of our listeners who listen to this show being that we're a baseball show that primarily bases our topics around the Yankees would expect us to bring up Derek Jeter in this spot. But instead, we're going to bring up Rafael Furcal, who was averaged taken in the 25th round, started the All-Star game, 275, 5 homers, 36 RBI, 54 runs, and 9 steals. This is a guy who's been regressing a little bit. What is your advice on for call for our listeners?
Yeah, you know, I have for call in NFBC, and I figured the regression was coming after that insane month of May, and it came hard. I mean, he's hitting, what, 200 since May ended. He really isn't running much anymore. You know, that's worrisome. But, you know, the thing about, again, about Furcal, if you look through his career, when he's been healthy, which hasn't always been, but when he's been healthy, he's generally shown very solid skills. You know, his skills have held up very well. He's not going to steal 45 bags anymore, hit 15 homers, but he makes excellent contact. He can still draw a walk. He's still got decent speed. So I would expect to see him settle in batting average-wise about where he is right now, I guess around 270, 275. So hopefully the regression monster is done chewing on him, and he'll give you decent production from here on out. But, again, he's not a huge power guy, and he's not going to steal a lot anymore. So if I had for Kyle, frankly, I'd probably be looking to sell and see if anybody would still be willing to pay on those May stats, because I don't think we're going to see another month like that from him.
Okay. At third base, we're going to talk about a guy that primarily DHs, but he qualifies at third base, and that's where his value is. And these are always big dilemmas for me, because this was a guy that I liked preseason because he was in a walk year, and I like guys that are in their walk years. But it annoys me when they get the contract extensions mid-year or 2 weeks after your draft. And this guy was average taken in the 17th round, hitting 295 with 23 homers, 58 RBI, 55 runs scored, and he's stealing too with 9 steals. And he just got his contract extension from Toronto. That's Edwin Encarnacion. Given that he just got paid, do you see a regression coming now that he got his money?
No way. I got to tell you guys, you know, I've been drafting Edwin Encarnacion in some league or another, honestly, since 2003, waiting for this kind of season. Now, I'm not saying I ever expected Encarnacion to go out and hit 300 with 45 homers and steal 15 bags or whatever kind of pace he's on. But you look at what he's done at various points throughout his season, he's shown excellent skills. He's shown the ability to take a walk, to hit for average. He's hit 26 homers in a season. He's stolen 8 bases in a season before. So you had to figure that if you ever put that together at the right time, you could see something really special. Our friend Jason Gray from ESPN always says when a player is doing significantly better or worse than he's doing, you have to say, is there something materially different about that player? And I think in Encarnacion's case, there are really three things that he's doing different. Number one, getting away from third base where he was a terrible, terrible defensive player and now playing first base and DH, I think has to be good for his mindset when he's at the plate. You know, we can't measure psychology, but look, if you're making a mistake at your job every single day and hearing about it from your boss every single day, it's probably going to eat into your confidence and your concentration and your focus. So I think getting away from third base has been very good for him. Number two, he's changed his approach at the plate mechanically. He's tweaked his swing. He's opened up his stance. He keeps that top hand on the bat now in his follow-through, so he's not flying open on the ball as much. And I wouldn't say he's hitting the ball the other way, but he's hitting it straight away, you know, a lot more straightaway power now than he used to show. He used to be more of a dead pull guy. And finally, his mentality is take and rake. You know, that's what the Blue Jays offense is all about, and they've encouraged him to see something good and rip it. So as a result, you know, I don't think he's having to worry about finessing the ball. He's able to just really lock in on what he's doing really well. So his fly ball rate is a career high, one of the highest in the majors right now. But combined with the mechanical change in his swing and you know, the mental approach, that's led to a ton of power. So long story short, I absolutely believe what he's doing right now is for real. Whether or not he hits, you know, 38 homers or 42 homers or 49 homers, whatever it may be, I think he's legitimately had a breakthrough, and I think he's going to go on and have a, you know, fantastic rest of the year.
So it's safe to say he's your man crush out of the show that we've had so far. That's your
oh,
guy,
yeah.
Right?
Look, when I'm not kidding you. I drafted, you know, my first year in NL Tout Wars in 2003, you know, they used to have the 7-pick reserve round, and you were just seeing all kinds of, you know, young players getting drafted. And, you know, he had put up big numbers in AA the year before. I figured he had a chance to contribute at the major league level in the second half, and I drafted him. And he's always done just enough to make me think that something special could happen. He's never done it until this year, but always enough to keep me on board. So I'm happy to have stayed the course with him.
Better late to the party than not showing up at all, I guess, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, let's move into the outfield. These three guys were taken in the 10th round, 9th round, and 27th round, respectively. And the guys that we're looking for your thoughts on are Melky Cabrera, Carlos Beltran, and Josh Reddick.
Okay, well, let's start with Beltran, because that's the first guy that comes to mind. I think he's the easiest. He's done all this before. That's the simple answer with Carlos Beltran. He's done all this before. He's healthy. The Cardinals are using him very carefully. He's running a little bit. You know, again, I don't know if he's going to hit 42 homers again. You know, people say, is this real? You know, can this player keep doing this with the finger quotes? I don't know what the end numbers are going to look like, but I do believe this is the real Carlos Beltran we're seeing. I don't have any concerns about him. You know, as far as Melky Cabrera goes, he showed a tremendous range of skills last year, nearly had a 2020 year, but it felt like that was as good as it was going to get. And you look at his numbers this year versus last year, cover up the counting numbers and the batting average, the indicators, you know, the walk rate, the ground ball rate, all that kind of stuff, looks like the same exact year. So I think he's going to end up around 2020 again, but I don't think he's going to maintain a 350-something average. That's not to say he'll slump in the second half, but I think he'll go on to be a 290 to 300 hitter, and his final average will reflect that. And who was the last guy?
Josh Reddick.
That's right.
Oh, Josh Reddick, sure. You know, look, I'm as surprised as anybody. I didn't think Reddick's power would play in Oakland. I mean, you have to assume that most guys are going to struggle with their power in Oakland. You have to assume that Reddick was going to struggle against lefties because he's never really had any consistent exposure to them throughout his career. But he's been a huge surprise. I think the power you have to assume is going to fade a little bit. The batting average isn't exceptional, but with the power, I think that can maintain. And the nice thing is he's stealing some bases as well. So I think he'll fade a little bit as the season goes along, not to the point of not being useful. But again, I hate to bet against guys, but I think we've probably seen the best part of his season, you know, given the concerns about his game and the environment he plays in.
All right, good stuff. And especially from two Yankee fans, having watched Melky Cabrera come up, I think that, like you said, if you cover up the average, it's not to say that the 350 average doesn't mean anything, but you cover up that average and basically say it's not sustainable. You know, like you said, he's 2020, 90-90 type guy, which isn't something to sneeze at, but you know, it's not all-star game MVP either. So, I would concur with all that, with those assessments. Hand the wheel back over. Go ahead, Corey.
Sorry to interrupt you. You know, one other thing, Melky's another good example for, you know, the impact of the mental state, you know, the psychology of playing the game. You know, he got kind of run down in New York. There was a lot of pressure on him, a lot of expectations on him, and I don't think that he was handled very well, and I don't think he handled it very well. He got traded to Atlanta and was visibly unhappy there. And it showed up in his performance. He had a terrible year. He was never happy to be there and didn't play well, and it just sort of compounded. I think he felt like he got a fresh start in Kansas City last year, and he loves San Francisco. I mean, it's a beautiful city. How could you not love it? So that's not to say that if he goes into a bad mood, he's going to take an 0-for-4, but clearly he's a guy who, you know, now that he's in a proper frame of mind to play baseball, it's being reflected a little bit more in his performance.
Good stuff. Jenny, take the wheel back and give Corey our old Wahoo starting rotation, see what he thinks.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Corey, one last thing, too, about the mentality with the players. One of the Melky's teammates actually is a perfect example of that, too, with Angel Pagan, because over here locally, there was always talk with the Mets that Angel Pagan never had his head in the game and that he would let slumps, you know, carry off the field as well, and it would, like, depress him and things like that. And he's having a pretty solid season for the Giants as well. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, the Giants have definitely taken advantage of a very happy environment for those two players, that's for sure.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. We've beaten this point pretty well to death. We can go on.
No, that's all right. Now, we're going to have some fun here with the starting pitchers. Now, the first one is a local guy here in the New York area that should have started the All-Star game, but hey, that's my opinion. And that is one R.A. Dickey, who, as of right now, has a sensational 12-1 record, an ERA of 2.66, and a WHIP under 1, and that's with his most recent start where he got roughed up a little bit. This guy, taken in the 22nd round, right now he's a top 10 fantasy player. What are your thoughts on Mr. Dickey?
Amazing, huh? Astonishing. And, people are surprised by his performance, but let's not forget, the last 2 years combined, he had about a 3 ERA. So,
yeah.
Dickey was very, very firmly established as a very good pitcher coming into this year. I think that's what's been exceptionally surprising is the strikeouts. You know, to see a guy go from fewer than 6 strikeouts career to averaging better than a strikeout per inning, that's unusual enough as it is, but a knuckleballer, I mean, that's like unheard of. So I think you just have to assume that, you know, when he was coming up through the minors and in his early major league career, he was a guy who sort of mixed in the knuckleball. I don't know if you remember, the Padres had a pitcher named Josh Banks a few years ago, and he threw like five or six different pitches, and he'd mix in the knuckleball once in a while. Mm-hmm. You know, Dickey had to commit to the knuckleball full-time, and I think history shows us that, you know, full-time knuckleballers from, you know, Phil Niekro to Charlie Huff to Tim Wakefield and so on and so forth, you know, it takes a while for them to really master that pitch. And, you know, many of them would say probably you never master the knuckleball. Dickey may have mastered that pitch, and I think he throws it harder than a lot of other guys do, and can vary the speeds intentionally a little bit more than some of these other guys could. So even though he's not throwing 98 miles an hour, you know, 82 with crazy movement or 75 with crazy movement and command, that's proven to be very, very difficult to hit. So I think Ari Dickey is quote-unquote real. You know, his ERA will probably drift up a little bit, you know, closer to the high twos or right around three where it was the last couple of years. But I think what's clear is that this guy is going to be viewed as a case study, frankly, for years to come. You know, we look at these unusual players who sort of break the mold, and, you know, we study and talk about their careers for years and years and years to come after that. And I'm not exaggerating. Dickey is one of those guys. He is probably the most unique pitcher in baseball history because knuckleballers are unique to begin with, or rare and unusual, and he is rare and unique among that rare breed. So I think people are going to be looking at what he did this year for many years to come.
It's really interesting because this is one guy who throws a knuckleball in the 80s, which is unheard of. Normally, the knuckleballers would throw their pitch in the 70s or 60s and follow that up with a mid-80s fastball to try and throw the batter off. But this guy is throwing his knuckleball as fast as his fastball, and he has control over it, which is just absolutely scary to think about because, you know, the knuckleball is a pitch that you just throw it, and wherever it goes, but Dickey seems to know where he wants to put it. And very few times have I seen this year him not be able to locate that pitch, and that's just a scary thought because the pitch is hard to hit to begin with.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. And you know, again, being in New York, I'm not a Mets fan, for full disclosure, but it's fun. It's a fun story because, you know, we've read and heard a lot about Ari Dickey. He's a guy who had some tough things happen to him growing up, obviously a lot of arm problems and sort of bouncing around. So it's a great story, and as a baseball story, it's just fascinating what he's been able to do.
Yeah, can't disagree with that. It is a fantastic story for the Mets, and they definitely deserve that. Next up here, we have a young ace here, and I'm not talking about Steven Strasburg, but someone who's pretty darn good as well, and this is Chris Sale from the Chicago White Sox. At the moment, he's 11-2, and ERA barely over 2. He's averaging just under a strikeout per inning. Now, the White Sox haven't mentioned anything about an inning limit for this guy. This is a pitcher coming off a season last year where he only threw 71 innings, so you have to assume the workload is probably going to get monitored. Now, thoughts on this young pitcher here?
Yeah, I mean, he's another interesting case. I mean, on performance, you know, you have to think that he's established himself as one of the top pitchers around. Again, I don't think he's going to maintain a 2.10 ERA or whatever it is the rest of the year. You know, that will drift up a little bit, and that's not to say he's not a good pitcher. But, you know, the concern with Sale is going to be the innings, is going to be his health. He was conditioned, you know, he was a starter in college, but came up quickly through the minors as a reliever and you know, his first couple of years with the White Sox. And then we saw that odd sequence in, I guess it was May, where they pulled him out of the rotation and made him the closer, but he never actually got a save chance. And then he said, my elbow hurts, but I want to start. And, like, it was this really – this week or 10-day stretch where it was just really, really confusing what was going on with him, and he's just been unbelievable since then. But, you know, again, if he was telling the truth, or if the truth got out that he had a sore elbow in May, I'm selling, man. I am selling because I don't want to be there in August in a stretch run in my fantasy league and have my number one starter not be able to, you know, to ring the bell. So, again, I hate betting against guys, but there is as good as he's been, there's just so much risk with him right now. You'd almost be crazy to not try and cash in on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking the same thing. Now, speaking of injury risk, let's stay with the Chicago White Sox here. And let's discuss his teammate, Jake Peavy. Now, this is one guy who was a Cy Young candidate every year when he was with San Diego until the injury bug started hitting him every year. At the moment, he's a candidate for Comeback Player of the Year. And he's carrying right now a record of 7-6, an ERA just over 3, and a WHIP just over 1, and a K per 9 of close to 9 right now. So Jake Peavy, this is one guy who has not thrown 200 innings since his days in San Diego. Is this someone you would sell now, or would you try and ride for the rest of the season?
Sell, Mortimer, sell! I mean, how can you know? Here, Jake Peavy, the 3 years before this year, he made 16, 17, and 18 starts. So you would logically guess he would make 19 starts this year, right? He's made 18 starts. He's you know, you got one more to go. But I mean, you know, look again. I hate betting against guys. I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be Mr. Negative. But when you factor in all the risk with starting pitchers, the track record of injuries that Peavy's had, the career-high fly ball rate, but very lucky home run to fly ball rate. You know, all these sort of things. The strikeout and walk rate are exceptional. His stuff is there, no problem. But the indicators suggest that he's very, very risky. So, you know, sort of like with Sale, it's not that I would be dumping on PB, but I would absolutely be entertaining offers. And if I got an offer of something that could really help me and improve my team down the stretch in some other area, I would absolutely be willing to deal on him right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've ridden the wave up until now and try and get whatever you can to carry into the stretch run because you really can't expect much more out of Jake Peavy. It's been 5 years since he's thrown over 200 innings. So it's kind of tough to see that happening at this point of his career right now. Now, especially coming off that surgery that he had last season. Which brings me to our next player who has...
Speaking of surgeries, here we go.
Yeah, speaking of surgeries, this leads us to another local player here, and that is one Johan Santana. He's been a fantastic story for the Mets as well, especially with that no-hitter that he threw a couple weeks ago. Right now, he carries a 6-6 record, ERA just over 3.5, and a whip of 1.21. This is a guy that owners were gambling on in the 19th round and trying to get at least top 10 value, and they've gotten more than that with Johan Santana. Is this another guy that would follow the Jake Peavy route and sell on Johan Santana as well?
No, you know, I think it's a little bit different. I would actually be hanging on to Johan. I think he's doing, from a performance standpoint, pretty consistent with what would be reasonable expectations for him. You know, a 3.5 ERA, you know, I think right around 8.5 strikeouts per nine, something like that. You know, the Mets have been very, very cautious with him. If you look at what he's done over his first 17, 18 starts, he's topped 100 pitches, I think, only three times. One of those was, of course, in the no-hitter when he threw 134 pitches. He's thrown on extra rest, you know, the sixth-day rather than the fifth-day, I think about half of his starts. So I would expect to see the Mets continue to use him very cautiously, give him the extra rest, get him out of there after six innings, you know, 98 pitches or whatever when they can. And as long as his, you know, as long as he doesn't cop to any injury, I don't think there's any reason for his performance to fade. So maybe he'll have a little bit of a stamina issue in September, but by the same token, this guy was a top-tier starter for 7 or 8 years before the injury, so given that he had a year to rehab, he's doing his pre between starts routine this year, I would expect to see him maintain pretty well throughout the season, so I wouldn't be let's put it this way. I'm willing to trade any player at any time if I can make my team better by doing it, but I'm certainly not looking to cash in on or dump Johan Santana. I think his performance is very legitimate right now.
Mets fans are very happy to hear you say that.
I just hope I'm right.
Yeah. I'm sure all of Johan owners hope you're right now. Last one I had for you is another young pitcher out in Arizona, and this is the first time All-Star Wade Miley, right now carrying a 9-5 record, an ERA of 3.04, and a whip of 1.09. This is one guy that nobody really was thinking of because he was taken on average in the 29th round, so pretty much a waiver wire pickup in most standard leagues. And the kid has continued to perform. He's struggling a little bit tonight against Cincinnati, but that is kind of expected with that offense in Cincinnati. But what are your thoughts on Wade Miley? Buy, hold, or sell?
Yeah, I'd be selling. In reality, you know, if you look at his numbers month by month, he's gradually, I don't want to say gotten worse, but he's been less and less impressive with each month. And I'm sorry to say, I think that trend will continue. He's not a hard thrower. He's more of like a finesse guy. You know, has excellent command, doesn't walk people, but doesn't strike out a lot of people. And I think that ERA is going to gradually drift up. Not to say he's not a good pitcher, but I think we've seen the best part of his season already. So, again, if I could sell high on him, if somebody wanted to make me a nice offer, I would certainly be willing to do it. What is he going to be able to do over a full season starting? Is he going to have the stamina, whatever it may be? I'm a little bit skeptical of him, so I'd be selling high right now.
All right. Well, that's all that I had. Now, I had one final question that I'm sure a lot of listeners are dying to hear. How was All-Star Week?
Oh, it was a blast.
Yeah?
It was a blast. Kansas City is a great little city. You know, the ballpark is beautiful. it reminds me of a minor league ballpark, and I don't mean that as an insult. It's very cozy and intimate. Most of the seating is in foul territory between the foul poles. You know, Yankee Stadium has all this outfield grandstand seating. It's like a coliseum. Kauffman Stadium is really not like that. It has all the seating behind the plate, you know, between the foul poles, and then these sort of wide open concourse areas in the outfield with the fountains and the big, you know, the crown scoreboard and everything. So it's a beautiful stadium. Love the city. Ate a lot of great barbecue. Nothing to complain about. Very happy about it.
Nice, nice. I saw that you had a photo with one of my favorite fantasy players, the Hammer, Joel Hanrahan. That had to be pretty exciting.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. And, you know, Hanrahan has actually been one of my anchor closers on a couple of my teams, but I've learned to not say that kind of stuff to players because they look at you funny. So I didn't say anything. But, a friend of mine works for a player agent, and I was invited to Hanrahan's party after the All-Star game on Tuesday night. And I was just, you know, biting my tongue to not say, dude, you're on my team or anything like that. And he's a super nice guy. He's got a really nice family, and it was just a great way to cap a really fun trip.
Oh, man, that is pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, anytime you meet one of these guys, it's got to be a little nerve-wracking. Everybody is like a little kid inside when they see an athlete of any sort. And I mean, to meet a top player like that in Joel Hanrahan, that has to be very exciting. So props to you, and hopefully one day, well, actually, maybe next year, the All-Star game is here in Citi Field. So, maybe Paul and I could be fortunate enough to go to the All-Star game, and maybe we can meet a player or two. So,
you never know. You never know.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul, do you have any other questions for Corey?
I don't have any other questions, but I want to anoint him the godfather of fantasy for our show now. I mean, that was an incredible two segments, Corey. I mean, we really want to thank you for taking the time, and, you know, it definitely answered a lot of the burning questions that our listeners sent in to us and dilemmas that they have. So we know you're a busy guy, and we just want to thank you again for taking the time to come on the show with us again.
All right, my pleasure, guys. Have a great night. Thanks for having me on.
Thank
you. You do the same.
All right, take care, guys.
Bye. Take care.
Take care. Kenny, that was some good stuff, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, that was definitely very cool. So, again, thank you to Corey Schwartz for joining us on the show for a couple times, and hey, who knows? Maybe again at some point. But we know he's a busy guy.
Yeah, I definitely hope we can do it again soon with him, Ken. Ken, do you have any big takeaways? Like, did anything that he said like really jump out at you, or anything that really caught your ear in terms of any advice that he gave us and our listeners?
Don't trade for Dan Haran. If you can trade Dan Haran, that's fine, because I know I have him in a couple leagues and he's killing me. But it's very interesting. I noticed that when it came to the young guys, it seemed like he wasn't 100% sure on a lot of the young guys, which makes sense because you figure a lot of these teams monitor the innings that they're going to have these guys pitching, and they don't want to risk any sort of injury. Look at the Nationals with Strasburg. They're going to shut him down, they say, after 180 innings. Now, whether or not those 180 innings are carried into the postseason, we'll have to wait and see. But it looks like when you acquire a young pitcher, let's say, that is having a sensational season, it's probably best to try and sell them these guys because you don't know how they're going to react during the long haul of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that caught my ear the most was that he actually was a hold on Lester. Because to me, you know, Lester looked miserable. And, you know, whether Crawford and all those guys come back in that line, they're already scoring runs. I mean, whether those guys come back healthy or not, the team as it's currently constituted is scoring runs. So that's really not been his problem. But, I thought it was interesting that he said, you know, that he can't be as bad as he's been, and it could just be bad luck. So I thought that was very interesting. Again, like you said, considering I'm a Lester owner, and I'm trying to sell him right now. So it's definitely a very interesting perspective. So it's good to get an expert's opinion and see what he thought. So that was a good hunk of the show there on fantasy baseball. And what we're going to do now is we're going to switch back over to reality here a little bit, and talk about a couple of quick topics before we close out for the week. And Kenny, you know, going back to a story about the Bronx, I want to talk about what happened at the Home Run Derby with Robinson Cano. Let's just do a quick recap for those of you who don't know what happened there. Is that Robinson Cano, a few weeks ago, when he was named captain of the American League Home Run Team, said that he would pick whichever representative from the Kansas City Royals was on the All-Star team. At the time, it wasn't clear-cut whether it would be Billy Butler, maybe Mike Moustakas. But nonetheless, though, he didn't pick any Kansas City Royal, and he got a lot of flack for it and came out on Twitter and public and social media saying he knew he was going to get booed, which is a good way to invite people to boo you, saying you know it's going to happen. And then whether it was true or not, the rumor was that his fellow Dominican, Albert Pujols, really lobbied for Mark Trumbo, and he chooses Trumbo over Butler, and he just gets absolutely hammered by the fans. And I'm going to ask for your opinion first, Kenny. I'm going to give mine. What did you? Was this fair, what happened in Kansas City to Cano? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I thought it was pretty funny that the fans are booing him every time he was making an out. But then after the five outs, you could tell Robbie was pressing, and he was getting a little annoyed at the way that everybody was treating him. But I can't take Robbie's side on this one, because if you're trying to please the fans and you're going to say you're going to pick a hometown guy, and then you completely ignore that and change your mind on it, you know what's going to happen when you're coming up to the plate. And you know what? This is going to carry on when the Yankees go back to Kansas City. He's going to remain public enemy number one for quite a while in that city. So it would have been kind of cool to see if Billy Butler would have been in the home run derby. Who knows? But, hey, I mean, the fact that Robbie picked Mark Trumbo definitely put on the show. He did not disappoint with some of the shots he was hitting. But you can't go ahead and say something like that and then not follow through with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because my initial reaction watching the derby was I was annoyed, and I think a lot of it was because I'm a diehard Yankee fan. And then I took a step back and I sort of said to myself, now, wait a minute, not even if this was a Red Sox, if this was anybody other than a Yankee, what would my reaction be? And my reaction would be similar to what you said. I probably would laugh and think it's funny. And, you know, I don't know if there's any truth to that. You know, people were yelling things to him about his family, because obviously if that happened, that's always uncalled for no matter where it happens. But let's assume that that was the overwhelming minority of the Kansas City fans. At the end of the day, these people pay top dollar to be at this event, and they're not causing any sort of violence or ruckus or anything like that. So as far as I'm concerned, they pay their money to sit in their seat, and if they want to boo, they can do whatever they want. And at the end of the day, like you said, it was funny. I just felt bad that it had to happen to a good guy like Cano and one of our own, you know, one of the Yankees. So for me, you know, I think a bigger deal got made out of it than it really was. And it's funny at the end of the day. And, you know, Robbie's not a little kid anymore, and his feelings certainly aren't hurt, and it's not going to affect his swing or approach in the second half of the season. So it is what it is to me at the end of the day.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I get the feeling there might be a minor change going forward in the home run derby, just because of the fact, you know, Bud Selig likes to, you know, tinker around with certain things. It wouldn't surprise me if in the near future, wherever the All-Star game is held, whichever side, you know, whichever stadium it's at, one player from that team has to be in the home run derby. You know, because
I think that's silly, because it's like, what happens if a host team has a guy with no power and then he goes up there and he whiffs or he gets one home run? It's just silly at that point. I mean, don't overreact to a single, you know, event. To me, it's not a huge deal.
Well, I mean, you know, the commissioner, he's trying to, you know, please the fans, and seeing, I'm sure he saw the home run derby and the way the fans were reacting. So just like how he added the second wild card and how he added the first wild card many years ago, wouldn't surprise me if he decides to add one other little thing, one other little twist to the home run derby going forward. But hey, I could be wrong, but just a thought. If it happens, it's not going to surprise me.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to wait and see. I mean, it's a story that's already died down, but I thought it'd be something that would be interesting to talk about that the listeners might be interested in hearing our opinions on. But with any good Yankee talk, we always have good Red Sox talk, too. And on this show, we've had sort of a reputation of bashing the Red Sox and Bobby Valentine and, you know, and Red Sox ownership. But we want to take time today at the end of the show here to actually give props and a lot of credit to Kevin Youkilis, who I guess technically we're not giving the credit to the Red Sox since he's a member of the White Sox now. But, you know, he made his return to Boston tonight, and he had an open letter sent out to Red Sox Nation, Terry Francona, amongst other people that he addressed in the letter. And we're not going to read back the letter on the air or anything like that, but I definitely want to take the time to say that this is a guy that, you know, despite the fact that he's been, you know, the face of the enemy for many, many years now, I couldn't give a guy more credit for being a classier human being in the way he handled his exit from Boston and the way he's handling his return. The letter, if you guys haven't read it, you know, Google it, get on the internet and check it out. It's a quick read. It's not a long letter. You know, he made it his business to talk about Red Sox Nation, obviously, as well as Terry Francona. No mention of Bobby Valentine, by the way. But,
no surprise.
You know, as well, no surprise there, right. And of course, his teammates as well. So this guy's a class act, Kenny. And, you know, I hate to bid you know, do to a guy and wish him good luck coming from the enemy. But you can't help but not hate. I'm not going to say I'm going to root for him, but you can't not hate, you know, this guy. This guy is a class act, and he's handling his business the right way.
I completely agree. I always looked at this guy as a punching bag whenever the Yankees and Red Sox would play, where he was always the guy getting hit by a pitch, and I always laughed when he would get all angry and everything. And it's very interesting when a player like that leaves a franchise that he's been with his entire career, and then you see something like this come out, and you really get an idea of what type of person he really is. And I'm with him, and I respect Euclid. I'm glad that he's found success once again with Chicago. It's kind of proof that the atmosphere in Boston right now is toxic, and you can see that with the way some of the other guys are playing right now. But I have a newfound respect for Kevin Euclid. And it's the Chicago White Sox game and Boston's loss. I mean, you see what's happening now with the fact that Middlebrooks has kind of been struggling since he's come back from being injured, and Euk has done nothing but rake with the Chicago White Sox. He just needed a change of scenery. And you know what? For him to send this letter out and to thank everyone, Terry Francona, for the two titles and for helping him become the player that he is now, I thought that was really cool. That shows a lot of love that these players have for Terry Francona. And maybe that was a little shot at Bobby Valentine as well, giving Francona credit and not mentioning Bobby V at all in his letter. But Kevin Euclid, I tip my cap to you. I have newfound respect for you.
You don't think there's any chance that they actually approach him to come back when he's a free agent, do you?
No. I don't think so, because, one, he has a team option that if he continues doing what he's doing right now, the White Sox are going to pick up. So he's not even going to hit the free agent market. And maybe it'll work out a 3-year deal or something if they buy out that option year. But I don't think Boston wants to go down that route, seeing the relationship that Euclid had with Bobby Valentine. They don't want to start that over again. Why would you do something like that, you know? And plus they have Will Middlebrooks that they're going to develop into the third baseman for many years to come. He still has some things he needs to work out, but Boston is not going to go down that path and bring back Euclid. They didn't go back and bring back Johnny Damon or anything like that. I know there were rumors, but they didn't go down that route when they had the opportunity. It looks like whenever a player leaves Boston, they leave for good. There's no chance of them coming back. And considering the way things ended with Euclid and the Red Sox, I'd be shocked if he even listened to an offer from the Red Sox.
Yeah, I would concur with that. I mean, usually these exits, like you said, they're messy, too, on top of it. I mean, you know, the Damon exit was messy. The Pedro exit was messy. Now Euclid, and, you know, the Poppy exit will eventually be messy, too. And, you know, these are very tough situations. I mean, because these are guys that, you know, were faces of the franchise that won titles. And, you know, we've gone through it, you know, with guys like Posada walking out. And we'll eventually go through it when Jeter is ready to step away, if he's ever ready to step away. So it's not an easy thing for these teams to sort of go through, and I certainly don't want to be in their shoes when it comes to these situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the Red Sox have had to deal with this a lot more than the Yankees, that's for sure. I mean, you forgot to mention Manny Ramirez, too.
Manny as well, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably the messiest one of them all, considering everything they had to deal with him. But it's tough when you have to say goodbye to players that have been part of your franchise as long as these guys have. But it's a part of the game. You know, these guys don't want to go, but it is a business as well. And, you know, the team has to continue to improve as the guys get older. So I hope when the captain's time comes, hopefully not anytime soon, it won't be messy. I doubt it will be, considering all the respect the Yankees have given Jeter over the years and vice versa. But you never know. You never know. We'll have to wait and see.
Well, speaking of saying goodbye and exits, we all know what that music means. That music means it's time to close. That's all the time that we have for this week. We want to thank Corey Stats Sports for joining us again, and for you as well for listening. Remember to check us out at facebook.com/STS2TeamBaseball, and on Twitter where our handle is @STS2Team. He's Kenny, I'm Paul, and we'll talk to you again in 167 hours. We are out.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming. Please drive carefully and arrive home safely. Good night.